This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Grubhub being purchased. Facial recognition software. IBM says it's not handing it over to law enforcement anymore. That is Technology Thursday. Right now, on the economic front, the unemployment claims that Elisa mentioned actually beat analyst expectations, and the Treasury Secretary is saying we cannot shut down the economy again. Let's get some insight into all this. The latest now, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Diane, let's begin with the jobless claims. Obviously, if you're among the 1.5 million, this is very bad news for you. But help us to understand the wider economic impact of this.
Well, what we're actually seeing is the numbers are even larger than that because of the special claims, the expansion of the unemployment benefits to gig workers and contract workers. Those aren't counted in those state totals. You add on another third to that to get this to actual totals for each week. And we're now seeing over 10 million in claims that are due to the expansion of unemployment benefits to people who wouldn't have qualified before. That's good for those people who wouldn't have qualified before because now they're finally getting some unemployment insurance and some help in a time when so many millions of people are still unemployed. But it really underscores the breadth of the crisis that even as bad as those numbers are, they're still undercounting the number of people who don't have a job right now. And that doesn't always measure different things and things like the unemployment rate and the overall payroll employment data that we saw released for the month of May. This tells us there's still a lot of churn out there. The continuing claims fell a bit. We hope that means some rehiring continued from those PPP loans. That's the good news. The bad news is even as hiring picks up, as the economy reopens, we're also seeing another wave of layoffs, more permanent layoffs. People that firms that thought they could basically temporary layoff workers are now having to make for permanent layoffs. And many firms who thought they could get by with maybe just cutting back the wages of some of their workers are now looking at more permanent layoffs or more permanent cuts in wages.
Let's talk about the Treasury Secretary saying we can't shut down the economy again. Now, I guess even more than a few months ago, an interesting challenge because we've seen the economic impact, but there's also this prediction of a second wave of infections.
And we are seeing infections rise quite dramatically in states that reopened before they really got it under control. One of the issues that's important about understanding is that we lost 1.4 million jobs before one state ever closed down just because of people's fear of contagion. And so one of the problems we face is understanding the need to want to keep the economy open. But unless we do more preventative measures without closing the economy, wearing masks in public places, things like that, really simple things that dramatically reduced contagion, you're going to have more of a fear factor out there as economies struggle, as public places struggle, because people will come back and then all of a sudden they'll be scared and then pull back again. So you don't need to close the economy to have negative economic effects tied to the coronavirus. They happened before we ever closed the economy and did lockdowns to mitigate the spread of the virus. And as we see the virus spread and cases pick up, particularly in some of the states that opened early, that is something that's worrisome out there because we don't want that to be a stumbling block for the economy over the summer.
Thank you so much. Always good analysis. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Just ahead in moments, the latest details about that spike in coronavirus cases, as there is big concern about a second wave of infections. More states are reopening their economies, and new figures are showing the virus is again spreading. Michelle Cortez is here, health reporter with Bloomberg News. Michelle, kind of give us a little thumbnail sketch of the spread of virus as it does seem to be growing in some areas.
It is growing in some areas. We have more than a dozen states that are reporting new increases week after week, 7 week average numbers that are increasing. Up to 22 states are actually seeing some continued levels, although not as high. We're seeing it a lot across the South and in areas where there has been some economic activity that's picked up. And that's where the concern is among public health officials, that we might be tying our opening to more cases.
And is the issue here for these public health officials to try to keep the number of cases going down? I'm sure they'd like that, but is it that or just the capacity to treat the people who do get the infection?
At this point, it's that we're just looking at the total number of cases. We know that hospitalizations and deaths followed case reports, new cases, because obviously it takes a little bit of time for you to get sick enough to go to the hospital. And then, of course, death is a lagging indicator of infection rates. So that's what they're concerned about. They're not so concerned about just that we're having more infections, since most people do recover pretty uneventfully. It is the concern that eventually we're going to start overwhelming our hospitals again.
And that you're dealing with ICU beds and ventilators and just in certain areas, unsure if they have enough capacity if things get out of control.
Exactly. And we're making some progress towards getting vaccines and treatments out there. And you can kind of see the public health officials are just hanging on there saying, just give us a little bit more time to get this done. You know, we're in this fight against the virus. Either the vaccine or the virus is going to get you. Give us more time to get to the vaccine. And people are just ready to get out there and start living their lives again. And it's a trade-off that people are making that decision.
And then we keep hearing reports that the model shows that this fall, at some point in the fall or early winter, it may go back up again. That's when we may have a significant second wave.
Exactly, because it is a seasonal respiratory virus. So we would expect that we would see an increased number of infections happening in the fall and the winter. That is how these seasonal viruses work. It'll be interesting to see how it occurs, because we haven't seen the drop off as dramatically in infections as we had expected. Normally the summer, you can get a summer cold, but generally you don't get summer influenza. So the idea that it was going to fall off dramatically and then pick up. So we have to figure out if we're already at this elevated level, if we're going to see an increase on top of that, or if we will eventually start seeing the rates come back down.
Thanks so much, Michelle Cortez, health reporter with Bloomberg News. Up next, the future of Chicago-based Grubhub under its new owner.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Chicago-based Grubhub has been sold. The new owner, JustEatTakeAway.com, based in Europe. We are told, though, Grubhub isn't going anywhere. Joining us now, Bob Reed, business writer and contributor to Chicago Magazine. Bob, kind of give us the nuts and bolts of this deal.
Well, it looks like a pretty good deal from Grubhub's perspective in that it got a price that it was seeking. You know, it had been pretty well known that Grubhub was in play. With this price, which is about $7.3 billion, you're looking at a premium of about 27% from the time the deal was announced. It's in the ballpark of where Grubhub wanted to be bought. You know, there was talk that Uber Eats was going to make a bid for him, and the two were talking, but they could never agree on price. Uber reportedly came in about in the $60 range or so, and that just wasn't high enough.
And so they're going forward with this deal. What does it mean for the jobs here in Chicago? Grubhub sticking around at all?
Oh, I think so. And I think if had they merged with Uber, you probably would have seen a lot of job loss and a lot of questions about where they were going to be headquartered. The fact that they're bought by a European company means that they will stay here in Chicago and continue on with their domestic and U.S. plans to get market share. And that's one of the things that they need to be in agreement with Just Eat's takeaway. Both companies seem to be willing to sacrifice profits and use revenue to do more marketing, to fight to gain market share. And Grubhub is going to need that kind of firepower if it's going to take on the likes of Uber Eats and DoorDash and the other competitors.
Yeah, it seems like some of those competitors, I mean, even willing to take a loss just to kind of bang up Grubhub a little bit.
I think that's right, and that's what's going on right now. You've got quite a battle for market share. And, you know, this acquisition gets Grubhub out of the sights of Wall Street in the sense that it can go about and deploy its strategy and sacrifice some revenue and reinvest and not get beat up for not meeting projections or meeting numbers. The bigger issue will be whether the two companies are culturally in sync. Right now, they both appear to have the same type of strategy. But, you know, there's a big difference when you're owned by a company, particularly a European company. They have different ways of doing business. They may have different values. And if that is going to translate to Grubhub, that's just something we have to wait and see if it's going to work.
Seems like there is solidly a future in this sort of food delivery. Everyone used to think it was just pizzas and, you know, maybe Chinese food, and that was about it. But people have no problem getting even fast food delivered to them.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the pandemic kind of slowed that business down some, and then it rebounded. But the question is, what about the restaurants that are providing the food and are using Grubhub and these other services? Are they getting a fair break? And that has been one of the issues that has been raised. Are the fees too high? Is it too opaque? Do we know what we're paying for as customers? Some restaurants would prefer to do their own delivery and cut out the middleman. And I think that's going to be a continuing battle going forward because these services have to prove that they're worth it, you know, that they're worth the cost of doing business with.
Thanks for being here. Bob Reed, business writer and contributor at Chicago Magazine, as Grubhub has been sold.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A dark and stormy day on Wall Street. We'll take a look at the sagging markets. Technology Thursday. We'll talk about the new debate over facial recognition technology and handing it over to law enforcement. Ford is expanding on Chicago's far south side. News we're following. Plans in place for an area-wide virtual high school graduation ceremony this weekend. On those markets, the Dow down 1,424 points, the NASDAQ down 369, and the S&P is down 141 points, oil down 8.5%. Right now, 74 degrees in Chicagoland with sunshine heading up to a high of 82 degrees. Some Republican state lawmakers want Governor Pritzker to move Illinois into the next phase of the COVID-19 recovery plan, 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
The numbers from the Illinois Department of Public Health show that all regions of the state are hitting their marks when it comes to moving into the next phase of Restore Illinois, which is scheduled to take place at the end of the month. 19 Republican state senators wrote a letter to the governor saying that date should be moved up to tomorrow. Governor Pritzker says the slow roll is designed to prevent a second wave of infections.
We are much better prepared now than we were in the spring when this came upon us and nobody had ever seen anything like this.
Even though the state is meeting its benchmarks to move on to phase four, a four-week wait is necessary, he says, to see if there's a spike in infections and hospitalizations tied to the end of the stay-at-home order on May 29th. Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 FM.
And autopsies confirmed COVID-19 infection contributed in the death of a 9-month-old Chicago boy. Cook County Medical Examiner's Office says Joseph Miles died at Mercy Hospital on March 23rd. We're committed to bring you instant updates on the coronavirus spread in Illinois as information comes in. We've compiled all our reporting on COVID-19 online at WBBMNewsRadio.com/coronavirus. WBBM News Time, 12:33.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets are really tumbling. The Dow down more than 5% today. Let's see what's going on. Chuck Carlson is here, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Chuck, what's going on today?
Well, to say the market's taking a breather is an understatement. It's taking more than a breather. But, you know, when you look at what the market has done since the bottom of March 23rd, you know, it's not surprising that the market is going to take a little bit of a step back. I think between March 23rd and going into this week, so you're looking at about a 10-week period, I think all but two stocks in the S&P 500 have advanced. So, you know, you had a bit of a speculative froth that had built up. You look at some of the more speculative areas of the market, you know, Hertz being a shining example. Here's a company that files for bankruptcy, and the stock goes from 80 cents to over $5 in about 5 days. That, you know, the market doesn't suffer fools gladly, and it will punish you And it's doing that today. To me, the thing that will be interesting to see if, in fact, how quickly people are willing to buy this dip that has been the story here since, again, the market bottomed on March 23rd. And this will give buyers a pretty good test to see if they're willing to step in here now with the market down 1,400 points.
And have we seen any of that kind of quicker action with people trying to make a little bit of money off some of these rises and falls?
Oh, absolutely. When you look, I mean, it's been pretty widely reported, for example, that there's been a pretty sharp escalation in the number of accounts that have been opened with various online companies, what the online brokerage firms, what investors are buying, especially individual investors. It has tended to be, again, over the last 10 weeks, a lot of the more speculative areas of the market, you know, the cruise lines, the airlines, you know, gaming stocks, et cetera. So, there was a lot of indication out there that at least you had seen a pretty good speculative bubble building up, and it's getting popped today. And the question, obviously, is this the beginning of a more substantial decline? I tend to think not. We'll have to wait and see. But I think that the market was overdue for a pretty good pullback. And, you know, we may get another 1,000 points to the downside here. But I would think if the people are looking at certain stocks, they're going to get a bit cheaper now, and they're going to get a bit cheaper over the next week, that they should feel comfortable buying quality. But again, the emphasis on quality.
And the speculative stocks, it's really interesting because when you talk about those airlines, cruise lines, that sort of thing, if they're able to recover and you're willing to stomach it, it seems like, I mean, they are potentially deals, but that's if all of those companies rebound.
Well, yeah, and I think it's a function of, you know, I think if you think the airlines are going to survive, I think there are deals out there. But also, when you look at what those stocks have done on a very short-term basis, I mean, you know, you've got a stock, and I think, you know, Southwest is probably the best of the bunch in the airline sector, but it's a stock that went from 23 to, you know, over 40 in, 3 weeks. And you look at some of the more speculative players in that group, like the American Airlines and so forth. I mean, those stocks just went gangbusters. So, you know, I don't think the market today is indicating that, you know, we're going to go back and test those March 23rd lows, and the airlines and some of these other speculative areas aren't going to survive. I think it's just saying, listen, you know, they're probably going to be okay, but, you know, I can't accept a stock that's, you know, doubled in 3 weeks. We got to take some of the steam out of it.
What about some of the, I'm thinking especially the tech stocks that did well in the heat of the pandemic, Netflix, Zoom. Are these companies that maybe stand to get hit as things get back to whatever the new normal is?
Maybe, although, you know, again, this has been a very interesting market in the sense that stocks that you typically would think, because of seemingly stretched valuations like a Netflix, like a Tesla, that would get, you know, really worked over during market declines. You know, Netflix is up today. So, you know, it's an indication that you have this, and Zoom is up today as well. So you've kind of created these new, quote, safe havens for investors that feel very comfortable buying kind of the coronavirus-type stocks, those stocks that seemingly will do okay, you know, even if the economy kind of lags a bit. And, you know, it's interesting. You go down the line, a lot of these technology stocks are outperforming the down market today. And, again, that has been the safe haven area for investors, and at least for today, that's continuing.
Thanks so much. Good to have you on. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. Just ahead, Technology Thursday, facial recognition technology in law enforcement is under debate.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. The use of facial recognition technology is nothing new in law enforcement, but there's a whole new debate about it. We're talking with Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, this specifically involves IBM, but there's certainly other companies involved too, Amazon as well. It sounds like they're backing off a little bit on who they will give the facial recognition information and data to.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that the political climate is obviously, let's put it this way, the underpinnings for the political climate have shifted. People are looking at this, you know, sort of gathering personal information, you know, much more critically, at least in this time. I think that's probably, speaking personally, I think that's probably a healthy reassessment. But Amazon, for example, has just put a one-year moratorium on the use by law enforcement agencies of their facial recognition technology, which is called Recognition with a K, R-E-K-O-G. And so, and IBM decided it's going to quit the facial recognition business altogether. Their CEO condemned software that he said is used, and I'm quoting, for mass surveillance, racial profiling, and violation of human rights. So it's obviously a fraught and interesting landscape right now.
And yet the technology is valuable. It is useful. So it's not like it's going to go away. Does this mean it's just going to maybe go to lesser known players?
Well, that's a great question. The short answer is yes, it already has. In fact, some of the most concerning, for many people who study sort of civil liberties in particular, one of the most concerning versions of these smaller players a lot of people haven't heard of is this company called Clearview. Now, Clearview was basically unknown to the general public until January, and the New York Times reported that they had developed basically a breakthrough facial recognition system that was in use and still is by hundreds of law enforcement agencies. Basically, the technology goes out and scrapes social media pages, Facebook, Google, and so on, and creates what amounts to an amalgam, a composite of your face in all kinds of places, allowing someone with this software in their smartphone to walk up, take a picture of you, they've never seen you before in your life, and to name you and know where you live. So, you know, there are limits, and this particular smaller company is very powerful, but that's what's going on right now.
And that allows law enforcement in certain venues, I'm thinking large events, whether it's sporting events or concerts or festivals, what have you, it allows them then to just scan the crowd and see if there's anyone they're looking for. At least that's where it could lead.
That's right. If there's an upside to this, and there certainly is, American intelligence, military officials, they've used facial recognition software for a long time and overseas anti-terrorist operations. To your point, if they're scanning a giant, say the Super Bowl, let's all hope that it happens. But if the Super Bowl happens and they're scanning everybody who's entering and they're using facial recognition technology, they may well be able to pick out somebody in a crowd who is on a list of bad guys. Now, the challenge is that this MIT just did a study and it said that lighter skinned men were almost always positively identified, meaning that it was a proper match, but up to 35% of darker-skinned females were falsely identified. So, in other words, the software has a challenge, and it so happens that challenge is based on race. So, there, you know, it's obviously a very complicated subject.
And for these companies, you have the social aspect, and you also have the financial aspect. A lot of money to be made here, but there's also these challenges, and they're going to face pressure, and it's going to get even worse.
Absolutely. I think you put your finger on something very interesting, and that is that, look, the monetary, you know, the temptation here is huge. Imagine, you know, Amazon's done a great job of gathering all kinds of shopping data, right? You know, they've anonymized it. They've been careful. But the point is, at least as careful as they can be, but they know what you want to shop for. They have helped industry broadly because they're helping sell things to people who want them. Great. But if you add facial recognition and then privacy issues to that mix, it gets really complicated fast. But the money is definitely a temptation.
Thanks so much, Paul Hochman. He's president of Humongous Media, joining us on Technology Thursday. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come today, the expansion of Ford Motor Company on the far south side.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Ford is expanding on the south side, the automaker planning to extend its reach to property near its Torrance Avenue plant. Let's get some of the info on it. Albie Galoon is here, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Albie, always good to have you on the show. Kind of give us a thumbnail sketch here of what Ford is doing.
Yeah, hi, Cisco. Well, Ford has leased a roughly 360,000 square foot industrial building near its factory, its assembly plant on the southeast side, and they're going to be using that for pre-assembly work. We don't know exactly how many people are going to be working there, so that's one unanswered question. But, you know, this is obviously good news when you look at the current state of the economy, that Ford is expanding, and so I think we can be happy for that.
Yeah, and we hear, you know, quite often about the situation in Illinois, you know, government finances and taxes and people leaving the state and all of that. But then you get an announcement like that, even more significant that Ford's doing this.
Yeah, I guess so. And you know, this is, this is good news. Again, we don't know exactly what's going to be happening there, but you know, Ford is like just about every business is having a hard time with this coronavirus. I mean, they're going to be
losing, they're expected to lose $5 billion in the second quarter. So, you know, they're trying to muddle through this very difficult time, but, you know, they're still moving forward with this. And, you know, that's good news. You know, one thing that's interesting about this from a real estate side is that, you know, the industrial real estate market has really held up pretty well so far. I mean, obviously, we're early into this this cycle here, but it's held up pretty well. And the developer of the building where Ford is moving into is moving fast forward with a very large industrial park down there. So they're still optimistic. They're not seeing really any sign out there that their market is suffering that badly.
Oh, that's some good news. What about commercial real estate in general? I'm looking out the window here at Michigan Avenue, and I see two cars right now, Albie.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough if you're in the commercial real estate business. If I had to rank the sectors from worst to best, I'd say hotels have been hit the hardest, maybe followed by retail, office. Apartments are doing okay, but their landlords are having a hard time collecting their rents, some of them. And then industrial is probably the strongest at this point. You know, in downtown Chicago, obviously the hotel sector has been crushed. We've had a lot of trade shows cancel. And, you know, the downtown, you know, downtown restaurants have many of them have shut down, or, you know, they're reopening now that the economy is reopening. But, you know, a lot of the retail tenants are not going to recover from this. And so there's going to be some long term impacts on retail, on the entire real estate market. So we'll see how it shakes out. We're still in the early stages here.
Good insight. As always, thank you. Albie Galoon, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.